Coming up on Focus, I'm Jack Brighton, sitting in as your host, and today we'll take your questions about landscape and travel photography. Joining us will be two highly acclaimed expert photographers. Larry Canfer is known across the country for his beautiful pictures of Midwestern prairie landscapes. Brian Johnson is a national award-winning photojournalist who has helped thousands of students become excellent photographers in his 25 years at the University of Illinois. They both join us in the studio to talk about the craft of landscape and travel photography and to answer your questions about how to get the best pictures of whatever you're photographing this summer. They say the best camera for any occasion is the one you have with you, but whatever camera you have with you, it might help to know more about getting the most from it. Whether it's film or digital, I think we've got you covered this morning. We'll talk with Brian Johnson and Larry Canfer about cameras, photography, landscapes, travel, and capturing that perfect image, and take your questions. Stay tuned. Good morning. This is Focus. I'm your host today, Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen. During this hour of the show, we'll do something we like to do. It's rather fun every once in a while. Talk about photography. We'll talk about summer photography, travel and landscape photography, how to get the most out of the image you're capturing. We can talk about cameras or techniques or various things that have to do with the craft of photography. And we have two completely great guests for this discussion. Larry Canfer, well known for his Midwestern landscapes. His work is shown in galleries and museums all across the United States and in collections all over the place. And he's primarily he's well known for prairie photography, but also does a wide range of other kinds of work. And all over the United States and Europe. We'll talk with him. And also Brian Johnson, one of our favorite guests here on the show. He is a professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois, a former staff photojournalist at the News Gazette, and he's been teaching at the University of Illinois since 1988. Brian has won all kinds of teaching awards. He has twice been the head of the Visual Communications Division of the Association of Education in Journalism and Mass Communication. And he's a former vice president of the Illinois Press Photography Association, and he's won all kinds of national awards. So we're glad to have him with us, and Larry Canfer, and we invite you to join the conversation. If you have questions for us, all you have to do is pick up the telephone, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Also, anywhere you hear us, toll-free 800-222-9455. And you can also send us an email question at will-talk@illinois.edu. Or tweet us something. Boy, this is getting complicated these days. At Focus580. That's our Twitter handle. And I want to just also mention before we get started that we're doing something I think kind of fun with this show. We have posted to our Facebook a note about the show, and we're inviting you to comment on that note by uploading a photo. If you would like to share a nice photo you took, something that you'd like to have as an example of your best work, or if you have something that you feel you didn't quite nail and you'd like some guidance, we'll try to provide that after the show on our Facebook. So just go to our Facebook page, which you can find from our website or probably Facebook, for example, and do that, please. So we'll get started, and thanks to you both for being here.
Yeah, very good. Glad to be here, Jack.
Appreciate it. Sorry, that was kind of a long, rambly intro. the summer photography, general topic, what are you guys working on these days? I think you're heading up to the Pacific Northwest, Larry.
Going to go to the Pacific Northwest, a place I know well from my youth. And there I'll find ocean, deserts, waterfalls, forests.
Sounds great to me, yeah. All in a very short space.
Right.
Yeah, and my family just came back from a trip. We went to Japan, believe it or not, and just spent 2 weeks there. So it's very fresh on my mind, all the things that worked, and probably in some ways the things that didn't work as well when I was out shooting. So
did you take a lot of photos in Japan?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes, the answer is yes.
In the city, in the country, what kind of shots?
We were mostly in the city. You know, we were in Tokyo and Kyoto and Osaka and Hiroshima. So it was mostly city things. Larry and I were talking just a little bit before we got started here, and you know, I was asking Larry, you know, how he shoots when he goes out on vacations like this, and especially if you have your family with you. So how do you manage that when you've got your family, but yet, you know, here you are, you know, you're trying to do your own work?
Well, it's a little more complicated, and generally, if I see something, then, yeah, everything stops.
Uh-huh.
Makes it a little harder, because a lot of times I want to really set something up and
right.
and do those more complicated images, maybe a really long exposure. Or a,
right, yeah. Yeah, and that, you know, because I was thinking about our backgrounds, and, you know, so I'm coming more from a photojournalism background where, you know, being in the city and taking pictures of people and things, I think, is doesn't require quite as much setup, but it's still the same thing. You know, you're with your family, and it's like, okay, I'll catch up. You guys go ahead.
Oh, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, where's Dad? Oh, he's back there.
Another foot. Take another shot.
Yeah.
Well, how do you decide what to carry with you in these circumstances? Japan is obviously a little bit more of a trek than Portland, but still.
Yeah, well, you know, I always, basically what I've been shooting with lately is just a little, I don't know, I guess I would call it a point and shoot, but it's kind of a, you know, a really sturdily built point and shoot. But my son, Alex, you know, had a camera, my son, Andrew had a camera, my wife, Christine had a camera. So, mm-hmm. So that was kind of nice because if there was something that I missed or didn't see, didn't really worry about it because I thought, well, they were, you know, probably looking. So I've gone from, you know, take a lot of gear with me towards going a more, you know, I don't know, bare bones approach and just, you know, kind of going on the philosophy that, you know, having the camera with me and being looking and feeling comfortable just pulling it out and shooting is going to be the best thing for the type of work I've been doing lately.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I kind of think about easy accessibility.
Mm-hmm. As being it. Well, some of the point and shoots have become incredibly powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been really amazed with the quality of the images that this camera comes up with. But again, you know, it's sort of that's the style I've been shooting in lately, yeah. So that fits very well. So, and Larry, what do you shoot with when you're on vacation?
It depends. So I've been working on a collection of Chicago, and I got the G1X, but before that G15, which is
right.
essentially the same, really the same point-and-shoot kind of camera. But it's the pro end, and I shoot in RAW. And it's nice because it's so small, and you could put it in your pocket. So if you're in the middle of wherever in Chicago,
right.
you don't have all this ostentatious gear. And I've always been a little apprehensive about opening up this huge case with film. Well, it used to be film and
yeah.
light meter and this
right.
and that. But so I was saying I did a trip to India about a couple of years ago, and I brought – it's like, what do you bring? So I brought my larger camera, the SLR, one lens – now you have a little bit of, you know, it's a telephoto, but it goes from 28 to 300. So you lose a little bit, but you don't have to change the lens.
Right.
Which was a good thing. A couple of batteries, which I charged here, and that lasted me. And a small tripod. Mm. Just a barely usable
yeah,
tripod.
Yeah, but that was really smart. Right.
Yeah, and because I also do very long exposures, and
exactly.
you really need to have that tripod to do that, or the HDR
yeah.
Kind of image. So that's kind of, I think, what I'm going to do on this trip. I've got a Gigapan, which is really interesting. It's where you take a photograph. You could take 150 photographs of a scene, and you can stitch them all together. And it's incredibly high resolution. So you can, you know, each inch of the photograph is as high resolution as one full frame. So I don't know how better to explain it. Maybe.
No, I mean, yeah. I think that's it. Yeah, it's stitching together several images. So it gives you a very immersive, you know, image when you're done. So it really can help people feel like they're there when they're looking at it.
Right. And wow. so then, you know, you go back to more equipment. So, but the digital has really helped to lighten the loads, you know, and allow us to be more, to think more about the image rather than
right.
The technical end. Because photographers have always been pretty, I think, technical.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Inventor kind mm-hmm. of, you know, there's always these gadgets that photographers
yeah.
invent to make it easier.
Yeah. And I think the essence of what we're all saying is you think about what kind of images am I hoping to produce? You know, how am I going to capture this? What's my goal? And then starting with that as your foundation. I like what you said about taking a tripod that was a barely usable tripod. But what I like about that is it's saying, yeah, I have several tripods I could take, some that are really stable.
And expensive.
And heavy and, you know, big. But you said for the type of shooting I'm going to be doing in India, having a tripod that's just able to do the job and I feel confident about it, but not so big that's going to be a problem. I mean, I think that's a really good approach for so much of what we do.
You mentioned shooting in RAW, Larry. Can you talk about that? I think a lot of people will know what that means, but some won't.
RAW is basically a format that when you take the photograph, it records everything on that the camera sees, that the chip sees. So you're getting the best of what your sensor sees. Anything beyond that, like a JPEG, will compress and it'll interpolate down the image so that when you open it again, you've lost something. And it has to interpolate it back up.
So this is the camera setting that you decide to choose to shoot RAW as opposed to JPEG.
Right. And then afterwards, you can tweak it just a little bit more. So, for example, in JPEG, you should measure the light. You know, if it's a cloudy day, you put it on the cloudy setting. Or if it's inside, you have to put it on inside because it's harder to filter that later. Yeah. Whereas in JPEG or in RAW, it doesn't even matter.
Right. Because it recorded everything that the sensor saw. So you can set the white balance later, which is really a nice thing. And I think there are a lot of I know for some photojournalists, you know, who don't have the time, it's like they're shooting in RAW just so they don't have to worry about what's my white balance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We did have a caller who wanted us to explain the term like DSLR. Maybe we could, you know, start with some – make sure we're not leaving anybody behind here.
Yeah. So there are a couple different versions or styles of cameras. You know, when we talk about a point-and-shoot, it's a small camera that's normally about as big as a note card in general.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll have a viewfinder, sometimes not. Then you have what sometimes are called the bridge cameras or sometimes are called super zoom cameras. and with those cameras, a lot of times they'll have a viewfinder, but they'll have a very capable zoom lens built in, so something that maybe goes from 24 millimeters to something crazy like 800 millimeters. But you can't change the lens normally. And the maximum aperture of those lenses isn't quite as fast as it would be if you had a DSLR, which is a digital SLR, which basically is a camera that you can change the lenses on and have greater flexibility with that. And also something that Larry mentioned before with the GX1 is that normally the better cameras will have a larger sensor size in it. So
yeah.
So starting from a larger sensor, you can get more information, whereas if you start from a small one, no matter how
right
what you do, you don't have that information.
Yeah.
It's like using the – back in the old days, what were the littlest, those little disc cameras or something?
Yeah, or 110 size.
Yeah, they had little tiny negatives.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it brings up a couple things that, so with many of our cameras today, you can set the resolution that the camera's going to use for taking the pictures. And so with some of the cameras, if you set them on the low resolution setting, in the old days when our memory cards were really small, it was like, oh, look, I can, you know, record, you know, 2,000 photos. But the problem is, just like with the disc cameras, mm-hmm. you know, the image size is so small, you couldn't really do much to them. But now that our memory cards are so large, 16 gigabytes, 32 gigabytes, you know, 64. I mean, that doesn't really matter. So being able to have that really large sensor that's recording a lot of information and a better tonal range, I think, can really help us out.
Do either of you still shoot in film?
Film? What's that?
Yeah. I know. My answer exactly. Yeah. And I don't really
make it, I guess.
Yeah. And you can still get it processed even. But I don't miss film at all. Do you?
Not a bit.
Yeah.
I always wondered, in 2003 is when I got my first DSLR. And at that point, I thought, well, you could kind of see film had a little bit better. But now there's so much more you can do. And I think in terms of prints, the archival stability, you know, the... prints from a good digital printer, a pigmented inkjet printer
right.
is even more archival than anything that was, except for maybe silver gelatin.
Right.
Anything previously. So, you know, there's just nothing but positives, I think.
Right. You know, back in the day when we'd work in the darkroom, and I know, Jack, you've worked in the darkroom as well. When you were printing an image, there was a lot you could do to try to bring out tonality and things. But you had to, I don't know, it was a little bit like being a magician in some ways. You had to have a really good memory for what parts of the image needed how much, you know, burning or dodging. But now that we have digital, you know, we can really just look at the image on the screen. I think what Larry said is really true, too, is that... you know, we can do so much more. We can get at so many more of the features, the tonality, the tonal range, you know, the color balance and things so easily now that we could do it with film sort of, but I don't think to the degree that we can do with digital now.
I think the real caveat with digital is that if you're not careful, if you're the master of digital photography and you're not careful, you can take all the emotion out of a photograph. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm feeling, at least a lot in my work. You know, I'll take a photograph and, you know, I may want to have, it's a beautiful day today, you know, or yesterday there were some beautiful puffy white clouds,
yeah.
you know.
Oh, yes.
And that's really the way it was.
Yeah.
But let's say you get a not so good day. You may want to put in a blue sky with puffy white clouds, but that's not that. That's just too
contrived
it's
artificial.
And it's hard to stop yourself because now your imagination is the only limit.
Yeah.
And I found at least with my work that people are attracted to the fact that it's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's
right.
some garbage in the picture, you know, in the you know on the road
right.
or something,
right.
people feel like. You know, I was there.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, to me, that's the essence of having a good image is to bring that, the viewer, into that spot and to have some feeling toward that spot. And so anyway, that's where the digital, I think, you got to be a little careful with that.
We have a caller to talk with. We'll welcome others. Let me just mention again, we're talking about summer photography. Any questions you have about taking pictures are welcome. We have one caller would welcome others. Our guest, Larry Canfer, very well-known photographer here in this area and actually all over the country. And Brian Johnson, professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois, also award-winning photographer. They're happy to take your calls, and the numbers again around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. We have someone in Champaign County first on line one.
Hi.
Hello.
Last time there was a photography show on, I asked about a polarizing a lens for an iPhone, and it turns out there is a commercial product, but I haven't even priced it because I still think I can find a sheet of polarizing filter and slide it in between my case. And I just don't know if you looked into that at all. And I wonder whether I'm thinking of concert settings where there's bright lights.
Right. So polarizing filters for the iPhone and iPad and all that. And it's funny. Before the show started, we were talking about polarizing filters. And for regular cameras, we have a circular polarizer, which supposedly doesn't affect the autofocus and the exposure setting. And then just the regular, I guess we'd call it a linear polarizing filter, where you can really adjust the just the intensity of the effect from it. But I think, you know, I think it would be cool to, you know, if there is a, because there's a commercial product out there that'll let you do a polarizing filter, you know, with a smartphone or with a tablet, I would definitely try it and see if it affects, you know, the exposure setting or the, you know, autofocus. But it can have a really dramatic and I think usually positive effect when you're taking landscapes. Do you always use a polarizer pretty much when you shoot?
I feel like you can only use a polarizer, or I only use a polarizer on a clear day when there's not a lot of humidity, because that'll kind of, I'm talking about for the sky, to right. get a good deep blue sky. A lot of humidity, it's not going to really help. And at high noon, it's not going to help. What you need is, I guess it's a 45 degree angle. The sun needs to be low in the sky. And then I use a linear, and then I turn it and dial in the amount of darkening or reflect.
Yeah, accentuation almost. I mean, so what the polarizer does is it really can richen the sky and make the clouds look more intense for the highlights and shadows and all of that.
It gets rid of the stray light.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. One other thing that can be really good about using a polarizing filter, and I had this happen when I was on my vacation, is that sometimes you're trying to shoot things through glass where there's reflections on the glass, and you can use the polarizing filter to remove some of that reflection depending upon how the light's hitting it, because it, you know, that'll affect how well the polarizer is going to work, but that's another time that a polarizer can be handy if you've got reflections you're trying to.
Yeah, I don't know if the commercial product allows you to rotate it. It would be nifty if it did, and that might be the deal breaker. But I thought I could just try it with a sheet of cut up piece and just see how it works to start off with. But if you think that people are getting, you know, I don't know if it would really help for what I'm actually thinking of, which is when you get these washed out bright lights on a somebody's bald head or something like that. I told Jack about that already.
Good one, Paul. Thanks.
See ya.
All right.
Thanks for the call. We have another caller up next, Suzanne in Champaign on line number two.
This is actually a reminiscence. Larry, do you remember when you shot a picture of four Irish Terriers back in the late 70s or early 80s?
In the studio?
In the studio at Round Barn. And I've always remembered it as my favorite picture of my dogs. And I came in and I asked you, and you said, did you take pictures of dogs? And you said, well, yes, you did. I said, well, can I bring mine and you'll do it? And you said, yes. So I walked in with four dogs. And you said, where are your helpers?
Well.
And I said, well, I don't have any. We all came in a little Horizon car together, four dogs on leashes. And you took some of the most wonderful pictures I ever have.
Thank you. Well, I love the challenge. You know, it's sort of like the Central Illinois prairie, the challenge to show the beauty. And the thing about the dogs is, you know, I don't know if I barked at that point. I'm not gonna bark now. But you know, you got to get their attention. So, how do you do that? It's that high pitched sound,
wow.
And then when one of them is looking one way, the other is looking the other way.
Yes, of course. Stuff.
Right.
Boy, that is a challenge.
Well, all you had to do with mine was say dogs, and they'd all look at you. But I remembered that, and to this day, that is my best picture of my dog.
Oh, thank you.
Well, nice. Thank you so much for calling.
I wanted to say thank you again.
All right. Other calls are welcome, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu, and also you can Send us a tweet at Focus580. And by the way, our dear esteemed colleague, Craig Cohen, who used to host the show, tweeted to us. He still has an original Larry Kanfer photo that WILL gave him in 2002, and he considers it a very prized possession. So I did want to ask Larry to talk about the prairie, because it is something that, I mean, all my prairie shots don't look very good, but gee, yours look great. You know, I'm not asking you to reveal all your secrets or anything, but is there anything that you would say about, like, how you approach that?
Probably what got me so excited is I moved here from Oregon. Mm. And so there's such a stark contrast. It got me to think about, you know, where is the serendipity? Where's the beauty? You know, I mean, if all you see is, you know, flat. And so if you it's not like the Oregon, the mountains, anyone could just take a look at it and the beauty is visible. You have to work a little bit for it. But I think that heightens your excitement when you work real hard for something and then you see it. It's like, aha. And so I think the beauty in the prairie is that if you look at the subtleties, look at the beauty, the subtle beauty. So, for instance, how many people have maybe driven over to Monticello on Monticello Road and seen, the moraine. Out of nothing is this big moraine. And that's kind of an exciting, you know, there's a mountain in central Illinois. it's these little things that I think I try and show and accentuate. So there are times of day, people talk, and I like early and late. I like it early a little better. The atmosphere is more still and early in the day when the light is low, and that gives a more three-dimensional quality to the images. You know, if let's say there is corn growing, then you get the shadows. And so when you take a photograph, it looks like you were there because it's, you know, it looks more three-dimensional. Even foggy days. I like foggy days. It's just everything's kind of really soft and subtle and, you know, you don't have to have just this picture-perfect kind of blue sky day to really show us. Well, I mean, serenity. You might want to show a serenity. So you have to think about what you want to get across and think in those terms about how you photograph it. So anyway, I'm getting off the question of the prairie. But to me, it is amazing that we have miles and miles of flat. And so the sky puts on a show and the ground puts on a show and we live in this little tiny horizon. So when you think of those things, when you go out and photograph, maybe you show more sky, maybe show more ground, or maybe you focus on the beauty of all the little people living on this little horizon with the little structures.
Well, the other thing that I noticed about your work is the use of angles. There's so many interesting ways of framing the landscape that all have to do with, you know, a fence or a road or a barn or, you know, the rows in the field, whatever they are. That stands out to me.
I think a lot of that has to do with when you're thinking about in making an image. I think about foreground, middle ground, and background. I think about composition. I like rule of thirds. I think of the viewer looking at a photograph, and if there's something in the foreground, they might look at that, and then their eye might go middle ground and background, and that draws the viewer in. And rule of thirds does the same thing. You could be getting a focus point at, let's say, the left third, and they'll see that. People will see that, and then they'll look at the rest of the photograph, and then they might have little discoveries through the rest of the photograph, but their eye will come back. So it keeps the viewer's eye inside the image. And so those are some of the
That's great. Things, I think. Okay. We have another caller to talk with. Let's go to line number one, David in Urbana next. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hello. If you don't mind, I actually have two questions. The first would be going back to the polarizing filter. I know you prefer the straight filter, and most of the generalized advice is the round circular filter, but I think it's mostly because it's supposed to have an advantage with the automatic focus. The straight filter doesn't affect manual focus, does it at all?
Yeah, I don't think that it should at all. I mean, really, it's just how the autofocus mechanism works. So, no, I mean, in manual focus, no problem.
And you feel that you have better control with the straight filter?
I do.
It's a little hard to find them, but I guess I can order one from the mail order.
Good luck.
Yeah. The other question has to do with the ground glass screen. It's possible to find one that has a split image range finder in it. It also is possible to get that with a brighter screen. Do you think I would find the split image to help with the telephoto focusing?
I always like a split image when I'm, you know, focusing manually. You know, in the days gone by, a lot of the professional cameras would allow you to change the focusing screen. And I don't know if a lot of the DSLRs now really let you do that. I think, you know, so much has been given over to autofocus that I don't think they think as much about that. And it's something I haven't looked into. I know when I was, you know, shooting with my Canon F1, you know, the screens and the bright laser matte versions of them were a really nice thing. But I'm not sure with the digital DSLRs now that they even really let you change the screens.
With a larger format, you know, you can get the Fresnel, you know, these brighteners and all. But it was so much bigger. It's kind of like, you know, buying a little quarter-inch by quarter-inch screen, it's kind of tough.
Apparently, there's a company called Cat's Eye. And they offer the screens with split image for, well, I think all of the digital Rebels, the 7D Canon, I believe the 60D, and I think some of the high-end 35-millimeter format Canon.
So is it, since I'm not familiar with them, so would you send your camera to them and they would, you know, retrofit it?
You can either do that or they claim it's not difficult to do it yourself.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if my hands are steady enough.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think if you were doing a lot of manual focusing, that would, you know, be something to think about. But I think in general, I've been pretty happy with the, you know, autofocus. And I will throw my camera into, you know, manual focus here and there if it's really having a problem focusing. So,
well, that's what I've been doing, but I sometimes find the ground glass, I guess I'd use the term ambiguous.
Yeah. You know, with some of the cameras, when they're in manual focus, you can turn on a menu command so it will magnify the center portion, and that can be pretty helpful.
Well, I think I may try it.
Why don't you try it, and then the next time there's a photo show, call back in and let us know.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly will.
Yeah, that would be great.
It's very tempting. Well, thanks so much.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks for the call. We're talking about photography here with Larry Canfer and Brian Johnson. We will continue our conversation in just a minute, but we need to take a short break. We'll be right back. And this is Focus. I'm your host, Jack Brighton. During this hour, we're talking about taking pictures, how to do it better. And we have two guests who are about the best we could ask for the conversation. Larry Canfer, extremely well-known photographer, especially his prairiescapes, but he also does a variety of other kinds of work. And Brian Johnson, professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois, a photojournalist and award-winning photographer himself. We have time to take your questions if you'd like to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. And by email at will-talk@illinois.edu. And also, we're inviting you to send us your photos. We have our Facebook, our Focus Facebook page. You can post a comment, upload a photo, one that you're particularly proud of, you'd like to share, or one that you feel didn't quite get it and you'd like to get some guidance. We'll try to provide that after the show, so we invite you to do that. I wanted to ask, Larry, you're about to head to the Pacific Northwest, where they have these things called waterfalls. Right. And I've always, you know, I see these beautiful waterfall photos, and some of them have like freeze the water, and some of them have this flowing action. Do you have any particular preference or you know, advice on how to capture those kind of things?
Well, you could. I'm going to preface this by saying you can overdo anything. There is, with moving water, it's always kind of nice to do a long exposure. The rocks are not going to be moving, but the water's going to be moving. And if your eye looks at a waterfall for a split second, you see a little bit of white. You see where the water is foaming. But if you were to take that and multiply that by, say, a minute, it would be like a ribbon of white. So that's essentially what you're doing with a long exposure. Now, you know, you have to kind of test how long of exposure. Sometimes it could be 5 seconds or 10 seconds or even a minute. I've been playing with like 10-minute exposures, which is kind of interesting. There's a app called Trigger Trap. Have you ever – I don't know if you've where you can take your iPhone and you can set your – you can plug it into your camera and it can take a 30 or more second exposure. And you could do interesting night shots, really long night shots, you know, with these long exposures. But you can overdo any of that. But so, for instance, so for waterfalls, you know, that's a long answer, I guess.
No, that's great. What does Trigger Trap do? How does that integrate with your camera?
Well, your most DSLRs can go up to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But what if it's really – what if it's a night shot and you want to make it look almost like day? You know, there's always enough light there. It just – it takes a long time to register all that light. So Trigger Trap, this app, will allow you to take, you know, a five-minute exposure, and it times it. It does a number of other things too, but that's kind of a fun app to have. So I'm taking that on vacation with me, but we'll see. You know, you could do if you did a waterfall photograph of a waterfall for, you know, 5 minutes, it might be just all white and you wouldn't see any of the water, and it's just not going to look good.
Well, what's the difference between using Trigger Trap and like using your bulb setting for? Because you can hold a.
You can hold it, but then you also have to touch the camera. Well, you have to.
Or if you have a remote.
If you have a release, yeah, you can do that. And then you have to time it. And,
yeah, okay. You know, so it kind of takes care of that.
It just automates some of that.
That's great. Well, we have another caller to talk with. We'll go next to someone in Champaign, Jeff, on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm in the process of buying a digital camera, and I had a question about lenses. I'm probably going to buy an APS Nikon camera, but I was thinking of buying full frame lenses since, and I realized the difference in focal length when you do that, but it seems like since you're using the center part of the lens, you probably get better resolution with a full frame lens, you know, an FX lens than a DX lens. I was just wondering what your comments are on that.
Thank
you.
So this is Brian here. I think some of it is one advantage of buying the full-frame version of a lens is that if you do buy a full-frame camera body later, then your investment in your lenses is still a good investment. Whereas if you know, buy the lenses that are engineered for the APS style or AP style size sensor, that then that sort of locks you into that size as you go through. You know, you certainly would think that if the lens, you know, since you are using mostly just the center portion of the lens, that would help. But I'd have to see some tests of that to see, you know, if that's true or not, you know, because it could be that with the lenses that are engineered for a certain sensor size that they can more effectively engineer that lens for that sensor size. Mm-hmm. So I think it would remain to be seen. And I'd have to, you know, go to some of the photo review sites and see if they've tested that to see.
Yeah, I've never seen anything about it. I've asked the question, and nobody seems to have the answer. So I agree with you that if I ever go full frame, then it'd be nice. I just, you know, it's kind of a quandary. I sold all my film cameras, you know. It was a sad day.
Right.
And I've been trying to learn all the digital stuff since then. It's been a challenge. Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks for the call. You know, maybe for those who don't have haven't ever dealt with full frame versus, you know, a cropped camera, can you explain what the difference is on those?
Yeah, sure. So one of the differences from moving from film to digital is that when we're shooting in film, we had different sensor sizes essentially because the size of the film, the physical size of the film, affected the resolution of the image, you know, how much detail it could resolve and all of that. So traditionally we had 120 size film and then we had 35 millimeter size film. Those are, and, you know, going up from there, you could have, 4-inch by 5-inch film. As we moved to digital cameras, the thing that really wasn't advertised at all or talked about was the sensor size and how really with, all the new digital cameras, they really had sensor sizes that were, you know, of all different sizes. Most of the point and shoots have a sensor size that's about, some of them it's a sensor size that's about half as large as your little fingernail. Some of the cameras have a sensor that's as big as your little finger, your pinky finger, fingernail, and then on up to what we have full-frame sensors. And that's basically, it's a sensor that's as large as a 35-millimeter piece of film was, basically. That affects, I think, the quality of the image, because if you ask yourself this, okay, if I have a sensor size that's as big as my pinky's, you know, fingernail, you know, how large is each of the pixels going to be if I'm squeezing in 16 million pixels in that size mm-hmm. chip versus, you know, putting 16 million pixels on a chip that's, you know, as big as, you know, two postage stamps. So,
and one other thing about the sensor size is if you think about the way a lens works, if you have a regular lens, it actually has a circle. And, you take a 35-millimeter sensor that's 35-millimeter literally. I don't know how many. Was that an inch by something?
Yeah.
It's inscribed in that circle. So let's say it inscribes, you know, you can just fit that in. Well, if you then have a much smaller, like a 1/8-inch square, then that's going to look more telephoto because that 1/8-inch is going to be
it's going to be cropped from that, you know, larger size.
So right, from like a telephoto, it'll look
exactly.
more telephoto.
So it's like taking just the center portion of, you know, of that image. So it's like cropping it, making it look telephoto.
So you capture less wide an image. Essentially, a smaller image with the smaller sensors?
Yeah, I mean,
depending on the lens, of course.
Right. I mean, and it's where it gets confusing because it's only been recently for the general public where they've started to talk about the image size because it's like, you know, they got to a point with megapixels, you know, where it's like, well, once you're at, you know, 10 megapixels or 12 megapixels, is it that much better to go to 16 megapixels?
And they're finding that, you know, it's better to cut down the noise and they're able to put more able to make the sensors run cooler and so there's less noise and all. Mm. So anyway, the resolution is better. So don't always look at, you know, gee, I can get a 20 megapixel camera and that's going to be better than a 16. Not necessarily, you know. I mean, certainly an 8 isn't real good.
Yeah.
Right?
Anymore.
Anymore.
Well, that's very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then looking at the lens question. So when the APC size cameras came out, we still had lenses that fit digital cameras. And, you know, as we made the transition from film to digital and the lens mounts would fit from the film camera to the digital camera, what you'd have is what was called a magnification factor. So with most of the Canon cameras, like the Rebels, you'd have a 1.6 magnification factor. So if you were shooting with a 100 millimeter lens that was 100 millimeters on a full frame camera, with a magnification factor, that 100 millimeter lens gave you the perspective of 160 millimeter. So that's essentially what the caller was talking about, is that we have all these lenses that are made for cameras that have a larger sensor. Then the camera manufacturer said, you know what, we're really making a lot of these kind of professional level or serious amateur level cameras that do have the smaller sensor size. Maybe we should engineer lenses that are made just for that smaller sensor. It does get really confusing. And even if you look at some of the cameras on the lens barrel as you zoom, they have what's called a 35 millimeter equivalent mm-hmm. focal length, because it gives us a standard to say, well, a 25 millimeter focal length, well, what does that mean? Well, it depends on the image sensor size. So they've it's getting really roundabout here. They put it in relation to a 35 millimeter full frame. So if I'm zoomed at a certain level and it's at a 200 millimeter focal length at a 35 millimeter equivalent, it gives you kind of a common language, I guess,
yeah,
to
sure.
speak with.
But you still got to do some math here.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It seems like, you know. By the way, we wanted to mention that we are inviting you, listening to the show, to upload your photos to our Facebook page, the Focus 580 Facebook page. We've had several people do that. We'd like to, see what you've got. I mean, some great images, hopefully. And even if there's some images that you'd like some help with, we can provide that after the show. So we invite you to do that. Just go to the Focus 580 Facebook page and comment on the show and upload your photo. So thanks to those who have already done that. We have just about 5 minutes left with our guest, Brian Johnson, a professor at the College of Media at Illinois, who's a photojournalist and award-winning photographer, and Larry Canfer, who I think everyone probably here knows, the name Larry Canfer. And Larry, also, I didn't mention, but you've got a marvelous studio over in Savoy on South Neal Street.
We're real proud of that, and it's always nice, yeah. You know, to come take a look at, to get ideas for yeah. photographs and then go out. That's what I always try and do, and I did when I was getting started. I look at images and then...
Absolutely.
Just food for thought.
Yeah, so. It is, exactly.
See what other people have done. Well, there's some marvelous, obviously the web has changed everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, for good and bad, right? I mean, it's hard to make a living as a photographer. On the other hand, there is such great, it's a great resource for learning things and for seeing what people have done. So...
Yeah, well, for many professional photographers that made their money freelancing, it's, made it in many ways difficult because, there are people out there who say, I love taking pictures. I would love to have you use my pictures. Mm-hmm. I don't really care if I get paid for it or mm-hmm. not. So a lot of people put their images up on Flickr and, they'll include a Creative Commons license that says, yes, please use my image. But then you think about the professionals that are out there that can do, a custom assignment specifically for what your story is about. I mean, it's, made it difficult, for people to make a living when people are giving away their images for free.
I think some of that, though, is a matter of how people look at images.
Exactly.
Because people, it's like music.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be high fidelity sound, and now, many people, MP3s are just fine, and you don't hear all those nuances. It's the same. I think it's the same with images. There are so many images out there, and there's just a little bit of a leap. They all could be maybe 70, 80%, but to go that extra 20%, just like with anything, I think you can see the difference. If you really look, you can see the difference. And that's, you know, that all that extra work to try and understand, you know, what you're trying to get across.
Yeah, it's the other thing that's kind of connected with this is that with photos and also with music, as Larry brought that up, I think it's a really good point that you realize how many talented people there are out there, you know, creating music, creating photographs, and getting back kind of on the positive side of things, as Jack was saying, is that, you know, you can go to a search engine and, you know, type in a search for a certain type of photo and come up with just so many amazing images that can be real inspiring, I guess, in a way that, mm-hmm. wow, I want to go and take pictures of Arches National Park. Well, what else is out there? And it gives you ideas for what you might try. It gives you ideas for, well, I've seen 80 pictures like that. What can I do that, you know, is going to be something novel or unique? And I think that kind of gets at what Larry's talking about, is that, you know, many people can take a picture of a certain thing, but I think the people that are professionals that make their living on that, they do go that extra mile. They have that extra something that they're adding to that image, I think.
And I got to say, like my grandfather said, you know, luck is where opportunity makes preparation. Mm-hmm. And so you can get a lucky photograph with a rainbow or whatever. But, you know, also, you know, there's nothing like preparing and understanding your.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
We're going to have to stop. Sorry. But let's do this again.
I was going to praise you for planning your trip that you're going on.
Well, we'll talk about that next time we have you guys on the show. Larry Canfer and Brian Johnson, thank you so much for being here. I enjoyed it a lot. And please upload your photos to our Facebook page. That's it for Focus, and time to hand things off.